Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll receive a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynNBet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by OddsCrowd. OddsCrowd has a ton of free betting contests, including a $2,000 year-long MLB contest and a $500 weekly contest. Download their app today at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. Also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home to free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports gambling. Make sure to subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And we're also brought to you by Pick a free pick every day for every sport. Check out their expert plays and betting news at PicksWise.com. That's PicksWise.com. And finally, we also wanted to let you know about our Sports Gambling Podcast Masters Contest. We are giving away $500 in our Masters Daily Fantasy Sports Contest that is completely free to enter. Just go to SportsGamblingPodcast.com/Masters. That's SportsGamblingPodcast.com/Masters.
Back again, back up in your degenerate, filthy, dirty ear holes. It's the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Welcome back, or welcome here for the first time, episode 27. I don't know why it took you so long to hit us up. If you haven't listened to the first 26, there's some gold material in there. And some winning picks the past few episodes, too. So you did yourself a disservice, people. I am your host, Jeff Fox. I edit and write for Sports Gambling Podcast, and I run the MMA site, MMA-Manifesto.com. And I come to you from beautiful Ontario, where the weather is finally nice, but we're entering a four-week stay-at-home shutdown, which is going to be lots of fun. And to make matters worse, my wife just bought electric hair clippers, and she's been watching videos on how to cut men's hair. So that's if there are any religious listeners out there, I ask for you to pray for me. There's a lot of talk about you can just put a hat on your head if I screw up, you know. So it's going to be an interesting 4 weeks, to say the least. My co-host is not in such a dire straits, I don't think, at least not follically. That would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland, the host of Top Turtle MMA, the host of Prelim Picker. Both those are podcasts. I guess I'll call him a co-host here, or a associate host. There's sports do this instead of assistant coaches. I think they have associate coaches now, so we'll call Dan an associate host. And he's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, and he hit a +275 bat a few weeks ago. Right? That's your resume, right?
Yeah, only you're like taking my entry material away if you start putting that in the header. I can't bring it up later when I talk about how good I am with underdogs. Also, have you noticed, so to bring it back to your point about being an associate co-host or an associate host, have you also noticed that sports now have a lot of coordinators? Even sports that I didn't think needed coordinators. And then, like, the sports that I thought needed coordinators, like football, they don't just have offensive and defensive coordinators anymore. They have, like, pass game coordinators and, like, blitz coordinators. And, like, their coordinators have coordinators. I could be a podcast host coordinator.
Yeah, I don't think our budget is quite the same level as professional sports teams who seem to have money to burn that they have to make up positions of like coordinators to spend some of the public's money. So it's a good idea. Maybe if you want to do it on a volunteer basis, definitely you could be a podcast coordinator for SGP.
I think on the volunteer basis, I'll pass.
All right, I figured so. See, he comes off as a nice guy on the podcast, folks, but when push comes to shove, he's not so great after all. This is going to be a great podcast, though, because we actually have some fights to talk about this week. Last week, we talked about some minor league show called Bellator and I think a fake organization called ONE Championship. but now we got the good old UFC, who's going to be packing stadium soon. We got them back. For an event on ABC, no less. It's a very big fight card. We're at 14 fight lineup. We were at 15. One fight fell off, which actually, I hope neither of the fighters have COVID or any in their camp has COVID. The fight fell off due to COVID reasons, but I'm sort of relieved because it was one half of that fight was a name of a fighter that I didn't want to try to pronounce because I don't think it was going to turn out too well. Do you know how to say his name, Dan?
Let me try this because I did actually practice leading up and I was like, ooh, Kyle Daukus' opponent is very tricky. It's Aliaksab Kizriev.
Oh, my gosh. He nailed it. See, there is... We do put a little pre-production into our podcast. Sometimes I say names out loud also. And my son asked me, what's that? And I'm like, oh, it's a person's name. And the rest of our pre-production basically was summed up in an email I sent Dan a day or two ago. Just make sure we're on the same page as to who qualifies for as hashtag chunky guys on this week's card.
And I don't know if you saw a picture of Kizriev. I know he fights down at middleweight or maybe even welterweight. I think it's middleweight.
Yeah.
He has a stature about him that is, I wouldn't say a chunky guy, but we might need to add like hashtag dad bod or something because chunky guys only usually exist at heavyweight or very rarely light heavyweight. But he might have been like a lighter weight chunky guy or like a dad bod guy. He was very oddly. No body shaming here. No body shaming. But he had a shape not many fighters have.
No. Yeah, we do it out of love. Dan loves the chunky guys and betting on them. Yeah, we do have another dad bod on this fight card, so we're not totally lost on the dad bods. And we may have one or two dad bods talking in your dirty, filthy ear holes right now, too. who's to say? So, yeah, all is not lost. I'm sad to hear that we may have lost a hashtag chunky guy potentially on this card, but hopefully that fight will just get bumped down the road a bit. And I'll say Alice Kabob. Kizriev, Alice Cobb Kizriev. There's actually another fun name coming up, too, who is fighting John McDessie. So maybe we'll just jump right in. Was there any news within the past few days that you think we should hit on? I don't think anything exciting really happened.
I mean,
in the past couple
just
of days.
Consistently the UFC killing it with matchmaking. Every single day. I feel like I check out if you're a UFC fan and you don't follow Big Marcel 24, Marcel Dorf, the dude's got all of the fight announcements and usually a better grasp of who's fighting on which UFC card than the UFC's website does. So like I just kept refreshing his feed over the last few weeks, and every single time I do, I expect to see a match where I'm like, come on. And I don't. I just keep seeing ones that I love, like Jeff Neal versus Neil Magny got booked. I'm into that. Miranda Maverick versus Maisie Barber got booked. I'm into that, mostly because I think Maisie Barber's going to get her face punched in.
I thought they liked her, and they're starting to drop, but they're feeding her to another wolf, apparently.
Yeah, they and also another wolf who can beat her the same way she's been beat, too.
Right?
Like exactly what Roxanne Modafari did to her, a younger and 30 times more athletic version is going to do to her next.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Yeah, we crap on the UFC a lot for all the nonstop wrongs that they commit, but Yeah, I think we talked on air. It might have been off air, but we talked about how great the matchmaking has been lately, and it's, yeah, like you said, every day there seems to be better matchups. And while Big Marsali is a good follow, also you should check out the MMA fight announcement tracker on MMA-manifesto.com, obviously. I run that every week or so, and I just basically list every fight that's been announced in the UFC and any big one that's been announced in the other quote-unquote big MMA promotions. So, but yeah, it's they've been hitting it out of the park for sure with matchups, including this coming week. Segue into that because it may not be star-studded and it may have been hit a bit with COVID, but it's a very, very nice card. So yeah, like I said, it's a big fight card, so we should probably hop into it. Before that, let me tell you about our friends at WynnBET. A tradition like any other, the Masters is back, and WynnBET is a perfect app if you're looking to get in on all the golf action. Not the golfing type? Don't worry. WynnBET has all the best odds for your daily MLB, NHL, and NBA action. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. And make sure you check out their NBA odds for the Phoenix Suns, who are an amazing team, and they always have them favored. So, and if you are into golf, make sure you check out sportsgamblingpodcast.com. We've got a ton of Masters coverage, like previews and gambling advice, and we got some amazing people covering golf over on the site there. So, check it out. Okay, let's jump right into the card, which is now called UFC on ABC, Vettori versus Holland, also known as UFC on ABC 2, also known as UFC Vegas 23. I think it's also UFC Fight Night something, also UFC Fight Night 190, maybe 191.
It's got to be right around there.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So, as the title suggests, it will be on ABC TV in the United States, which is a big deal. It's their second time on ABC recently after. Basically, their first, they're back on network TV since their Fox deal went away many years ago. So they're back, and of note, it is a afternoon fight card for the folks on the East Coast. I guess early morning for you folks at last. And if you're another part of the world, you're gonna have to figure this out on your own because I'm not doing the math on the fly. So it starts at noon. That would be the prelims, and they would be on ESPN Plus noon Eastern because Eastern time zone is the best time zone, right, Dan?
That's right.
Exactly. There we agree on. We're agreeing already. It could be a boring podcast. And then the main card, which is on, like I said before, ABC or ESPN Plus if you're elsewhere in the world, or TSN if you're up here in the lockdown Canada, 3 o'clock p.m. And it's coming from the UFC Apex in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. So let's get right to it, shall we? We'll start with the welterweight matchup. There are quite a few fun names on this card for a host or an associate host to try to pronounce. Ipa Kasanagang. Kasangane. I add an extra G. Kasangane. Impa is fighting Sasha Paletnikov. Welterweights. Let's break that one down. We'll talk with we'll do Sasha's stats and info first. He is 6-2 with 3 knockouts, 1 low in the UFC. He has won 2 straight fights. He will be 2 inches taller. And I'm unveiling a new stat. Who is the more active striker of the two? I crunched the numbers for 2021 to see if a fighter that lands the most punches is more successful or not. You would think they would be. So I wanted to put it to the test. So I went to Fight Metric, or I think it's called UFC Stats now. And I checked on fighters' average strikes landed per minute and whether they beat an opponent with less strikes landed per minute on average heading into a fight. So where do you think the numbers landed in that stat, Dan, approximately? What percent, what's the winning percentage of a fighter who's generally more active, a striker?
I'm gonna say it leans to the person who's more active, but I'm gonna say probably not as much as you would think, because sometimes fighters rack up like a ton of strikes against somebody who's garbage. Yep. And then that'll skew their stats for a while. So I'll say the guy with more volume wins 62% of the time.
I thought it would be that high. It's 56. Okay. 56%. Yeah. So of my 11 different categories of stats I use to try to pick fights, it comes right in about the middle, the sixth, so, or seventh, actually. So it's a, you know, it's something to think of, and it is, you know, 56% is nothing to sneeze at. So, I jammed that little sidebar in there because Palatnikov is the more active striker of the two in this fight. He also has the grappling stats in his favor, which is 58% favorite for winning a fight. So he's got a couple of things in his favor. He does not have the stat line, the betting odds in his favor, unless you want to bet on him, obviously. Plus 230 he comes in at when I did these the other day. Impa, 8-1 in the UFC, two submissions. All the rest are not in the UFC, I'm sorry, 8-1 as a pro, two submissions. Everything else is a decision for him. So you may, if despite who you pick in this fight, you may want to go going the decision because Palatnikov's only finished half of his opponents. Impa's finished, a quarter of his opponents. So it's not a huge finish rate, which is kind of surprising because they're not super lightweight guys or anything. So Impa, a lot of sidebars in this. I still haven't made it through the first fight yet. Yikes. Impa, 1-1 in the UFC. He got knocked out his last fight. He won twice on Dana White Contender Series. He's 3 inches, has 3 inches of reach in his advantage. He's 5 years younger. He is a very healthy minus 300 favorite. What are you thinking on this one? The prelim king, Dan?
I think even though I was kind of hoping the number would come in a little bit closer because I do think Impa Kasangane is a pretty clear-cut pick here. I expected him to be a healthy favorite despite the fact he's coming off of that jumping, spinning back kick knockout that's like going to be played on highlight reels until the end of time, sadly for him. But there's like lots of reasons to love Impa Kasangane, right? Like, first of all, I think if you ran him back with Joaquin Buckley, he beats Joaquin Buckley. Like, I know that fight will forever be on highlight reels, but it's not because Buckley was a better fighter than him. It's because he landed one of the most ridiculous kicks I've ever seen. And you could almost say the exact opposite thing about Sasha Palatnikov, because, like, he was fighting Luis Kosuke, and if Kosuke didn't gas himself out trying to finish Palatnikov, he would have won that fight, right? Like, he was murdering Palatnikov. And he's not the first person to, like, stun Sasha Palatnikov either, because Mournir Lazez did back when they fought in UAE Warriors, and Mournir Lazez is pretty legit, too. He's a guy who's been in the UFC. He's got a win or two. But, like, I think Impa Kasangane being, a much more composed fighter than you saw Luis Kosuke be, I actually think he's a better striker. He's probably got the advantages in all the right places here against Palatnikov. He's a great counter-striker, which, you know, you mentioned Palatnikov is more active. I think that actually plays really well into Kasangane's hands. And then you add in the fact that Impa has been working at Sanford MMA for the first time, and not that I hated his old gym, Jim O, but like he's just got a lot of great training partners now and a lot more great training partners for him to work with. I think you're going to see an improved version of him, and I think just he kind of outclasses Palatnikov on the feet here.
There you go. I was thinking Palatnikov, but that a number that huge, and you know, I know because Kasangane I was impressed with him, regardless of him getting knocked out. So yeah, I think I'm going chalk on this one too. Not a big fan of minus 300, but we have to bet on every fight because we're degenerates. We have to bet $100 in every fight. In case you're new to the show, that is the rules. As a listener, you basically you're in a non, actually it is a binding contract. Excuse me. if you listen, you have to bet $100 in every fight. And you should follow our advice also on every fight. Moving right along to the next fight that you have to bet on, light heavyweights. Dan Young versus William Knight. William Knight was actually just supposed to fight a few weeks back against the Alonzo Manyfield, I believe, and that fell through, but now he's got a new opponent here. So Knight, 9-1 as a pro with 8 knockouts, 1-0 in the UFC, 2-0 on Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights. He is taking this on short notice, which is actually a big factor in picking winners for fights. Late replacement fighters have only won 35% of the time since 2020, so that's something to keep in mind there. But he was in camp, you would have thought, because like I said, he had a fight scheduled a few weeks back. And he has the grappling stats in his favor. He's at plus 108. His opponent, Jung, if you prefer, he's 13-2-1, 10 knockouts, 2 submissions, so he is a finisher. He's 2-0-1 in the UFC. The one in that was his last fight where he drew. He got a draw. I believe it's Sam Alvey, who's also on this card. He's gone 13 straight fights undefeated. So he had 12 wins before that draw. So 13 straight. 6 inches taller, 5 inches of reach, 5 years younger. He's slightly more active striker of the two. He's at minus 135. I think I'll go chalk on this, but looking at article in my website, I think Dan is going to go with the underdog, or at least he wrote an article about the underdog, at least.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I like William Knight quite a bit in this fight.
You didn't against Menefield, I remember.
Yeah,
right?
And I'll tell you why. So, first of all, I think I broke down Alonzo Menefield versus William Knight 355
yes.
times between, I think I did it twice on the prelim primer and once here, and then the fight never happened, so... But my big problem with William Knight against Alonzo Menefield is William Knight puts himself in bad positions. That's a fact. If you look at his fight on the Contender Series, he put himself in bad positions, just powered out. He was in a bad position or two against Alexa Kamer, just powered out. Because he's massively, massively strong for a dude, even at light heavyweight. And against Alonzo Menefield, as we kind of saw against Fabio Chiron, Menefield is a guy who is technical and takes advantage of people when they make mistakes. And I think that proved itself. Like, the guy made a mistake in the grappling department. He put him to sleep with a Von Flue choke. I thought William Knight was ripe for the picking by Alonzo Menefield for that reason. I don't feel that way about Daun Jung, though, because if you look at his fight with Sam Alvey, by all accounts, he had won rounds 1 and 2 against Sam Alvey, and he goes out there and just has, like, literally no urgency against Sam Alvey and actually almost looked tired. And not for anything, William Knight, like I said before, is a guy who is very strong, but he also has surprisingly a good gas tank for a guy with as many muscles as he has. So, like, I'm worried that Daun Jung is just, like, not the right type of guy to take advantage of those William Knight gaffes in the fight. So, I actually think Knight in his physicality here probably get by due to the fact that Jung is a little bit tentative. And that's silly for me to say because he's not always been tentative. Like, he looked good against Mike Rodriguez. But if the strength and power of Sam Alvey scared you off, I do worry about how you're going to feel about the strength and power of William Knight.
I think I'm going to go chalk, though. It's all good points. But I think I'm going to go different than you, and I'm going to go chalk. I like his finishing ability, and I like his undefeated streak, and I like he's way... larger, bigger. Man, learn how to speak. He's a bigger man of the two. Half a foot of height and 5 inches of reach, and he's younger. So I think, even though your technical breakdown is far more advanced than my handicapping here, I'm still going to go with the South Korean. So there you go. We got one difference. So see if we differ here. I don't think we're going to, because I just actually published an article about one of these guys on MMA-Manifesto written by a Daniel Vreeland. That would be a featherweight fight between Luis Saldana, spoiler alert, Dan wrote about him, versus Jordan Griffin. Mr. Griffin, 18-8 with 5 knockouts and 9 submissions. So we got another finisher here. Both these guys are finishers, so go for the finish if you want to prop bet on this one. He's 1-3 in the UFC. He lost his last fight. He's 1-0 on Dana White's Contender Series. Grappling stats in his favor. He's at plus 120. Saldana, 14-6, 7 knockouts, 7 submissions. So he's finished everyone he has fought, and you can't get more well-rounded than 7 knockouts, 7 submissions. He got his way into the UFC off the Contender Series, and this will be his debut, right? In the
yes.
UFC?
This will be okay. Saldana's first fight in the UFC.
Yeah, I didn't write debut, but it definitely is his debut. He's won 4 straight fights, all via stoppage. He is an inch taller and 1 year younger, so not much to say about that. Very limited stats for these guys because Saldana's got 1 fight under the UFC umbrella, technically, because he was on Contender Series, but he's 3 times more active a striker than Griffin. But like I said, grain of salt on that. He's also got striking stats in his favor. So all the striking stats and grappling stats, basically, you can pretty much throw out the window because we're talking 1 fight sample size. And he's at minus 150. I'm picking him, and unless Dan lied to all my readers at MMA Manifesto, he's taking him also.
Yeah, I love Saldana, to be honest with you. I think this is an absolute nightmare of the matchup for Jordan Griffin, and I'm shocked the odds are as close as they are, because for me, Saldana's got a bunch of things going for him here. First of all, Jordan Griffin isn't going to win a fight unless it hits the mat, right? Like, I love Jordan Griffin. I think he's a very fun grappler. That Marcella team that he hit on TJ Brown was so fun to watch. But at the same time, he's just not going to win a fight that stays standing. And he's fighting a long, rangy kickboxer type who seems like he's hitting you with broomsticks from that distance because he's so hard to get on the inside of. And if you've actually watched him on the regional scene too, he's got some really great body lock takedowns and some hip throws and stuff like that. Like, he's also a decent wrestler in his own right. So if this stays on the feet, he's going to torch him, and I actually think he does a good enough job keeping it on the feet. And that's if Jordan Griffin ever gets on the inside, which I think is going to be a big if for him, because Luis Saldana is very good at keeping range. So I expect Luis Saldana to be at range, absolutely pick apart Jordan Griffin, and probably knock him out.
And he may have tipped his hand for his lock of the week there also. He says he likes the line, which I do as well. So you also like the lines you see. Oh, how's that for a segue? The lines you see over at Odds Crowd. Odds Crowd has plenty of free contests, including a $500 weekly contest and a $2,000 season-long MLB contest. They don't actually have odds, but it's more fantasy betting type of stuff. But they're not just fantasy betting. It's a social app built just for sports bettors. It's free to download. You can live group chat with other bettors, track your bets, set up private betting contests with your buddies, and much more. Download the app for free or go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/odds. And we are also brought to you by PicksWise.com, helped by a team of trend-watching, data-devouring, sports fanatic wise guys, giving you the who, how, and why behind every prediction on every game, every day, and every sport, all for free. NBA, MLB, and NHL, whatever the sport, they have you covered with free analysis and, more importantly, free picks. Plus, they have all the betting news you need and expect an expert, best bets. Head over to PicksWise.com for all the free picks that you need. That's PicksWise.com. All right, so we differed on one so far, and we like the other two fights to go the same way. All right, moving along, who do we got next here? We've got the first bantamweight fight. Hunter Azur versus Jack Shore. This is an exciting matchup here. Azur is 9-1 with 3 knockouts and 1 submission, 2-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight, so he won 1, lost 1, won 1. Streak going on here. He's 1-0 on the Contender Series also. He's the more active striker of the two. He's at plus 120. As for Jack Shore, he's 13-0 with 4 knockouts and 8 submissions. 2-0 in the UFC, both via submission, 2 inches of reach, 3 years of youth in his favor, striking and grappling stats in his favor, minus 150. I'm going chalk again.
Yeah, and I'm going to follow you on this one too. I like Jack Shore quite a bit in this fight. And there are things I like about Hunter Azur. I think the fact that he moved to fight ready or back to fight ready or with the coaches again from fight ready because he used to be at the lab actually is a good move for him. He works with better wrestlers and he's getting back to his wrestling base. But I actually think the wrestling base is a really bad matchup against a guy like Jack Shore because, first of all, Jack Shore's got decent takedown defense and in addition to that also has a good guillotine if you're shooting in on him. He's got a triangle choke finish that he can hit you with. He's good with sweeps. He's a great grappler. I think, you know, probably the people who are going to give him the most trouble in the UFC and threaten that undefeated record are people who force him to stand with him and maybe are a little bit more polished on the feet. And for me, that's just not Hunter Azur. I think Azur is a good wrestler. There's a chance he might get some control time on the top. But ultimately, I just don't think being at a disadvantage on the feet and being at a submission grappling disadvantage while maybe being at a wrestling advantage is just going to be too much for Azur. I expect Shore to – I'm going to go out on a limb here and be specific with the submission. I say he gets a guillotine finish here.
Oh, not just a submission, but a guillotine. All right, there you go. That is a prop bet for you right there, ladies and gentlemen. Very nice. All right, moving right along, we've got – this is one of the fights we had to discuss in pre-production because it's a heavyweight fight. And we have to make sure we're on the same page. We may not be on the same page for all our picks, but we will be on the same page when it comes to chunky guys. this would be a heavyweight fight. Jorgen De Castro, Georges Danho. Now, De Castro, definitely a chunky guy, right? We're agreeing on that one, right?
Absolutely. He's very much a chunky. Although he used to fight at light heavyweight, I will say. He was not a chunky guy at light heavyweight.
Now, Danho is a bit of, I think we're debating this one a bit. Every picture you see of him, he seems to be sucking his gut in, a la Hiroshi Tanahashi, for the one person listening that knows who Hiroshi Tanahashi is. So, yeah, I think he's trying to hide something, Dan. I think he's trying to hide that he's a chunky guy. So I think we're going to hashtag chunky guy both these guys.
Yeah, I definitely think hashtag chunky guy for both of these guys. And the other thing, too, and I'm sure you're about to give us the lowdown,
yep.
Georgie Zano is always second in those pictures. Those pictures are all also at least 5 years old, because that's how long it's been since we've seen him.
Really? Has he been out that long? I might have overlooked that, but I'm going to get the intern to look it up right now. See when the last time the Man Mountain, Joshie's Danho, fought.
Yeah, I got it right in front of me. His last fight was against Christian Colombo at UFC Fight Night 93 on September 3rd, 2016.
Oh, my Lord. I was thinking about leaning towards him, but I am not now. Yeah, that's another stat that we like to throw around, is how long people have been out and whether that makes a difference. It doesn't make a huge difference. People who have been out more than a year have won 47% of the time. But this is far more than a year. Let's break it down. He's 5-1-1-1. So he's 5 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw, 1 no contest. All his wins are via finish. 4 knockouts, 1 submission. He's never been finished himself, so basically this is more likely than not this fight is going to end before the 15 minutes are out. He's 0-1-1 in the UFC. He drew his last fight, which was 5 years ago. He's 3 inches taller, more active striker, grappling stats in his favor. He's at plus 220. DeCastro is a chunky guy. I actually have that in my notes. It says chunky, just so everyone knows. I'm not just doing this on the fly. I actually do research. He's 6-2 with 5 knockouts. He's also never been finished. So, yeah, we're hitting a lot of good props, bet possibilities here. This is another one that you're not going to – you want to bet it ends within the 15 minutes. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He lost his last 2 fights after winning his debut. He also won on the Contender Series. He's 3 years younger, minus 290. I was thinking about going against him, but no, I can't at this point. So I will take the minus 290, sadly. I don't like numbers that high, especially for heavyweights, but I got to bet in every fight. So
yeah, I don't like the numbers that high, too, on DeCastro, who it seems like his biggest issue is just that, like, he's gotten into his last 2 fights and not been particularly active. And even if you go back to his win, I mean, like, he landed that punch moving backwards. And that worries me a little bit at heavyweight. But against a guy who got outstruck by Christian Colombo, who I don't think to be a particularly good striker and hasn't fought in 5 years, I mean, like, I would feel so silly picking Georgie Zano. So I have to imagine, though, that this is a fight that they set up to be like, okay, Jorgen DeCastro, if you are actually the guy who knocked out Justin Taffa, please stand back up. But otherwise, this is probably the end of his road if he loses to a guy on a 5-year layoff. But yeah, I can't see any path to victory for a guy who's hasn't fought since 2016.
Yeah, and this is not a silly podcast, so we will not be making silly bets. We will not be making silly jokes the whole time. This is a very serious thing that we're doing here. So yeah, we're both going with DeCastro in here in the battle of the chunky guys, and we've got a fun name coming up. Oh, and we have a Canadian also. I was going through my head wondering if there's a Canadian I could bet against, and I forgot about this man. John McDessie is back at lightweight, fresh off an appearance on the Top Turtle MMA podcast. He's fighting Ignacio Bahamondes.
You nailed it.
Bahamondes?
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Where is
Ignacio Bahamondes?
Where is he from?
Ignacio Bahamondes, is he from, is it like, no, it's Chile. He's Chile.
Chile. And Dan, notice Dan didn't say Chile, he said Chile. Listen to this guy. Wow. Showing me up. You may have to get promoted from coordinator. You may actually have to be associate host after that. All right, let's go with the Canadian, who I always like to fade. 17-7 with 9 knockouts. So he's a finisher. 10-7 in the UFC. He has been out for over a year, just barely over a year, 13 months, March of 2020. He lost his last fight, but he won 3 straight before then. He's at plus 155, and he, like I said, he was a guest on Top Turtle recently. I think it may be a bad thing, though. I haven't done the numbers, but I think there may have – I think I may have heard that there's a bit of a curse going on there, but I don't know for sure, and I don't. All fighters that listen to this podcast, ignore what I just said there. Or Dan, I'll have no interviews coming up. So, Bahamondes, he's making his debut. He's 11-3 with 8 knockouts. He won on the Contender Series. He's won 2 straight fights. He is 7 inches taller, 7 inches of reach, 12 years younger, more active striker, but we're talking very small sample size. Striking grappling stats in his favor, but like I said, that's based on one fight. Minus 195. Tell me about this man, Dan, and are we picking him? I have my name penciled in underneath him, but I haven't seen him. I guess I probably saw him on the Contender Series, but I don't remember much at this point in my life.
Yeah, and I saw him on the Contender Series too, and to be honest with you, I wasn't particularly impressed with him. I saw the knockout he had, which was a front kick, and as you know, if you front kick somebody in the teeth, you get a contract. It doesn't matter if you fought like one of the worst fights ever before that, which he didn't fight one of the worst fights ever, but I just wasn't very impressed with him leading up to that. And then he lands the front kick and he gets the contract. So,
he's a killer, bro. He's a killer.
Right. And that's what he's going to say. Right. And that was on, the same card that had Luis Saldana, who I just mentioned being an absolute killer.
Yep.
Carl Zolberg, who I thought, was going to do better in his debut than he did. And Jared Vandero was on that card too. They just gave, contracts to everybody. So, I actually think that this is a bad matchup for him because he's a guy who likes to do a lot of spinning, flashy strikes, and he's going up against a guy with a, 85 different striking black belts in John McDessie, right? Like, he's got, like, a taekwondo and a karate and this and a that. He's got 23 kickboxing fights on his record. He's been in the UFC. I don't think people realize how long John McDessie has been around. He made his UFC debut at UFC 124. George St. Pierre versus Josh Koscheck in 2010. He's been in the UFC for over a decade. I just think that this feels like one of those matchups where the prospect just kind of stepped in a little bit too much. Because, like I said, he's a guy who mostly strikes. He's going up against a guy who's got a good striking background. He's going up against a guy who's been striking with guys like Cowboy Cerrone and the likes of Alex Oliveira and people like that. So I think McDessie should be able to handle him here. I think all of that spinning stuff is just going to make him look silly against McDessie, and I expect McDessie to just do the more technical thing, land the leg kicks, and get it done here.
Let's do it, Dan. Let's go with a Canadian for once. I always go against him. Let's do it, since I really know not much about this man whose name is hard to say. let's go with McDessie, since I think he trains in the States now anyway, so he's not really Canadian anymore, right?
He now trains at the MMA lab along with, right. There's a UFC gym right next to the MMA lab, and he uses a kickboxing coach from Mexico at the UFC lab.
And if I know one thing, I know Dan loves the MMA lab.
Yeah, I do love the MMA lab. Not as, I will say, and I don't mean to be sacrilegious here, not as much as I love Fortis MMA. If there's a Fortis MMA fighter, I sure. Pretty much always take them, except for when I take their opponent and they're a plus 275 underdog.
Was that planned, Dan?
It was not planned. Just came to me like a gift from the sky.
Yeah, it couldn't have been planned because you didn't know what I was going to say, did you? Are you in my head, Dan?
If I am, I'm doing a really good job of hiding it until that moment.
Are you even real? I wonder that. The one time Dan sent me the podcast and I listened back to it and it was nothing but my voice on it, and that really threw me for a loop. Thinking all this time I've been talking to nothing, the imaginary person in my head, but nonetheless, he claims that he's an actual person. So, all right, back to the picks. We're both going McDessie in this one. I do need some underdogs. What, 14 fight card? We're gonna. You think about five or six underdogs will come through. I don't know if I'm going to be that chalky in this night, but I mean, I don't think I'm going to be that unchalky, but we'll see. Dan's got a couple already, which is good. All right, not filibustering. Let's move on. Women's bantamweight debut in Erin Blanchfield versus Norma Dumont Vienna. We'll just call her Norma Dumont, though, going forward. Blanchfield is making her debut on short notice, so that's a couple things to keep in mind there. She is 6-1 with 2 knockouts and 1 submission, never been finished in a fight. She is making her debut, like I said, on short notice, but she is not short on top-level experience despite only having 7 fights. She's had 5 fights in Invicta, the largest women's fighting league in the world, and she won 4 of them. So she's 4-1 in Invicta, which is very impressive. She's also won 3 straight fights. And she's 9 years younger, so she's got a lot of things in her favor. Also, if you like her, she's plus 200, so that's another thing in her favor. Dumont, though, 5-1 as a pro with 2 submissions, 1-1 in the UFC. She won her last fight after she lost her debut to Megan Anderson, I believe. Three inches taller, -250. Before I make her picks, I'll say you probably want to pick this one decision because neither of them are massive finishers. I'll let Dan make his pick first in this one.
First of all, let me start here. I love Erin Blanchfield. I think she's a phenomenal prospect. I think, you know, getting snatched up at 21, while it might not be good for some prospects, I put her almost in the Miranda Maverick avenue that, like, you know, Miranda Maverick's, what, 22? She belongs in the UFC, and she belongs in the top 10 of her division. I think Blanchfield fits that description. I think at 21 it's not too early to sign her. But I just think this was the worst possible way you could have worked her into the UFC. She's 21. She's coming to the UFC. And for her first fight, you give her no training camp. And you pull her up a weight class to somebody who used to fight even a weight class higher than that. Right? Like Norma Dumont, like you said, fought Megan Anderson up at featherweight. And she's so a former featherweight is fighting a current, not a current flyweight. Like, I guarantee all of Erin Blanchfield's fights after this are going to be at women's flyweight. So for those reasons, like, I'm already concerned, first and foremost. And secondly, I'm concerned because Erin Blanchfield uses a lot of her physicality and strength. At flyweight, she's a very strong fighter. The only person she's really had trouble with at that weight has been Tracy Cortez. And I actually think she beat Tracy Cortez in that fight. It did go down as a loss, but I had her on the judges' scorecards in the first and third round. But, like, the one problem she had with Tracy Cortez is Cortez could match her strength. And that was at flyweight. Norma Dumont is very strong for bantamweight. She's a very large bantamweight. She fit into women's featherweight quite well. So I'm worried about that size and that physicality if they do lock up in a clinch. And if they don't lock up in a clinch, I actually kind of like Dumont's striking here better than I like Blanchfield's, too. So I'm going to give the nod here to Dumont just because, you know, the youth here is probably not a benefit. The short camp, you know, going up a weight class, all of those are red flags to me. So I'm going to stick with Dumont.
Yeah, I totally whiffed on the weight class thing, but yeah, very true. I was leaning Dumont also as it was for basically all the same reasons. Debut short notice, and Dumont is nothing to sneeze at. She's a good fighter. So we will agree on that one. Lightweight, Scott Hot Sauce Holzman versus Matthias Gamrot. Holzman's Hot Sauce, right? I got that right.
He's one of the many. There's multiple Hot Sauces, right? Because Trevor Hot Sauce Smith is Hot Sauce as well.
Right. Maybe they're different flavors, perhaps. I haven't tasted either of these men. So.
One of them's the Dustin Poirier flavor.
Oh, yeah, Dustin Poirier is all about hot sauce, too. Jeez. Yeah. See the rabbit holes we've fallen down in this podcast. That's why we're recording an hour and a half podcast at this point. Okay, let's speed it up, guys. Lightweight. Let's talk about Mr. Hot Sauce first. Hot Sauce part, whatever, 1, 2, 3, whatever you want to call him. 14-4, 5 knockouts, 2 submissions. So he finished about half, or exactly half his fights. He's 7-4 in the UFC. He's been around forever. He got knocked out his last fight. He's 2-2 over his last 4. He's more active striker of the two. He's at +180. Gamrot, 17-1 with 1 no contest, 5 knockouts, 4 submissions, never been finished. 0-1 in the UFC, inch taller, inch of reach, 7 years younger, -230. I was thinking Holtzman, but no, I think I got to go Gamrot in this one.
Yeah, well, and first of all, his loss in the UFC is an excusable one. He fought Guram Kutataladze. Almost messed that up, but I caught myself. Kutataladze. So he fought Kutataladze, who I think people are going to realize is a really tough loss, and a lot of people had him neck and neck with Kutataladze in that fight, too, that he might have even won. Even beyond that fight, if we look at Scott Holtzman and pretty much how you can draw the path to victory in every single one of his fights, it's, can this guy take Hot Sauce down? If it's yes, then he loses. Can this guy not take Hot Sauce down? Then he wins 2 out of every 3. You know, like, that's basically how it goes down. I love Holtzman. I think his striking's good. I just think Gamrot is a great freaking wrestler, and Gamrot's going to take him down repeatedly as much as he wants.
There you go. We are both going with Gamrot in this one. Another I would have liked to take a underdog, but maybe I'll take one of the next fight because one of my favorites is fighting. We'll see. That would be the headliner of the prelim portion, lightweight battle between Jim Miller, who I have a soft spot for, and Joe Selecki. Miller, he was scheduled to fight Bobby Green, a month or two ago, and that fight fell through. Now he's got a prospect fight here. So Miller, been around forever. He's got 32 wins, 4 knockouts, 18 submissions. He's 3-2 over his last 5, lost his last fight. Got an inch of reach here. He's at plus 180. And he has been in the UFC. I'm just checking because I forgot to write this down. He's been in the UFC since UFC 89. So take that, whoever you were talking about earlier. McDessie, take that. UFC 89, October 18th, 2008. He's been a pro since 2005, so he has been around quite a while. He's actually he has the most fights in UFC history, right, at this point?
Yes, or one behind somebody, but
Cerrone, maybe?
Cerrone, yeah. I think there's some other people right up there. But yeah, he's neck and neck with Cerrone.
Yeah, because he's been around forever, and he's always been fighting. He basically doesn't really take time off. So anyhow, he is fighting a youngster, Joe Selecki, 10-2, 1 knockout, 7 submissions. So we're talking a couple grapplers here, which should be fine, which means we'll probably turn it into a boring striking fight. He's 2-0 in the UFC, 1-0 on the Contender Series. He's won 5 straight fights. He's an inch taller, 10 years younger, more active striker, striking stats in his favor also, minus 230. I hate to go against Miller, but I am going against him here.
Yeah, I'm going against him too. It's tough for me because you're right. Joe Selecki is a solid grappler, and this should be a fun grappling match. But I just also feel like if Selecki doesn't want it to go to the ground, he has that choice. Which means if it is that boring strikers match, which I actually don't think he's actually all that boring on the feet. I actually think he's a pretty talented striker. I think he'll probably outstrike Miller on the feet. And also I think if he doesn't like what's happening on the feet, I could see him taking Miller down. And literally all he's got to do is stay safe on the ground, right? Like, he doesn't have to do tons of damage. He doesn't have to try to submit Jim Miller. He doesn't have to try to do any of that stuff. He pretty much just has to go out there and do what Vince Pichel did, which was, stay out of that one arm bar he throws up. And as long as you do that, you're going to control him because he's not particularly great at sweeps. And because he loves his jiu-jitsu, sometimes he's not all that enthused or motivated to get back up. So I see this being a fight that Joe Selecki has a lot of control of where the fight goes. And so as long as he doesn't make that big mistake, I think this is his fight to win.
And the age gap, it's a big concern. We're talking 10 years. Younger fighters win 60% of the time, but you rarely ever see one with a gap this severe. 10 years younger. So yeah, we're both going with Selecki. And one of our team of production assistants let me know that Miller is tied for most fights in UFC history with Donald Cerrone. So this will put him into sole possession of number one until Cerrone fights next. So there you go. So that concludes the prelim portion. Let me tell you about a couple more sponsors, then we'll hit you with the main card ad-free. One of our home the home, SGP. SGP Masters, let me tell you about. $500 winner-takes-all DFS contests for the Masters. Completely free and easy to sign up. Take a screenshot of your review of the Golf Gambling Podcast, submit your review, and you'll get the contest link to enter. So pretty simple. Review the Golf Gambling Podcast, send us a screenshot, and you get the secret ballot to enter our SGP Masters contest. So you can do it all over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/masters, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/masters. And finally, betterland.vegas. Betterland.Vegas is like YouTube, but for what hashtag the Gens only care about, which is sports betting. We're giving out free daily video picks over on our Better Than Vegas profile page. And same with Dan's other family at Top Turtle. They give out picks there, so make sure you check that out too. And make sure you check out this week to see if I actually did get a homemade haircut for my wife and how it looks. You never know. She may end up slipping and taking off my beard too. You never know. So Better Than Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well. They got a ton of free picks and handicappers to check out. Make sure you subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick. So it'll be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. All right. Main card. Right now they have 5 fights listed. It was originally 6, so one of those fights we just previewed may get bumped up to the main portion of ABC. We'll start with welterweights. Hashtag Florida man. Mike Perry will be fighting Daniel Rodriguez. Perry is 14-7 in the UFC, 11 knockouts. Not in the UFC, that's as a pro. 7-7 in the UFC. He has fought quite a bit in the UFC. He is 1-3 over his last 4, including a loss in his last fight in which he missed weight, which is something of note here. He's 5 years younger than Rodriguez, surprisingly. He's at +142. As for Rodriguez, 13-2 with 7 knockouts, 4 submissions, never been finished. 3-1 in the UFC. He lost his last fight. He went 3 straight in the UFC before that. He's 1-0 on the Contender Series, 1-0 in Bellator, 3 inches of height, 3 inches of reach. More action checker, grappling stats in his favor, -180. I think this is a slam dunk pick for Rodriguez for me.
Yeah, I'm not completely sold on it being a slam dunk pick. He is my pick. I'm going to go with Daniel Rodriguez. I like D-Rod. I think people sleep on his grappling and as good as it is because, you know, he's fun to watch strike and he doesn't always go to that grappling. But he's a 10th planet guy, which I always give respect to. And when you're fighting Mike Perry, being a good grappler never hurts. But the other thing I will say that makes me a little bit less confident in it being a slam dunk pick is that Mike Perry goes out there and throws bombs, right? And Daniel Rodriguez is not afraid to fight that fight and to go out and throw bombs. And not that I think that he's a huge knockout risk, because as you talked, you know, like, he's not a guy who's been knocked out, but he is a guy who's been jumped, right? Like in that Dwight Grant fight, he was basically out. He won that fight in just over 2 minutes, but he was basically unconscious earlier than that. So it's not like he can't be knocked out or he's got some like incredible chin, and you are fighting Mike Perry and maybe don't have like the greatest, I mean, not that he has a bad chin, but like if you don't have the best chin and you're fighting Mike Perry, there's danger. So I'm going to go with Daniel Rodriguez, but I'm going to go with it tentatively. I think he does need to fight a smart fight here, use his physicality and his grappling a little bit. And I have enough faith that he does exactly that.
Yeah, and Perry just seems, the wheels have seemed to have fallen off, and he's in life and in the cage, and yeah, I have a hard time picking him for any fight, any matchup. He's in it at this point. So let's move into a hashtag mom fight. This is actually becoming a more frequent occasion in the UFC. It used to be rare, but we've got two moms going at it in this one. Women's strawweight, Nina Ansaroff, will be making her debut. Her return after having a baby with Amanda Nunes, and Mackenzie Dern, who has already fought since she gave birth. Let's break down the jiu-jitsu wizard Dern first. She is 10-1 with 6 submissions. She's never been finished in a fight. 5-1 in the UFC. She won 3 straight fights, and she also was 1-0 in Invicta before coming to the UFC. She's 8 years younger than Ansaroff. She's even muddy right now, +100. And Ansaroff, 10-6 with 4 knockouts, 2 submissions. She's lost once by submission, so that's of note since Dern is a submission whiz here. 4-3 in the UFC. She lost her last fight. That was back in June of 2019. She also fought Invicta once and won that fight. She's an inch taller, has an inch of reach, so not much happening there. She's a more active striker, striking and grappling stats in her favor, -125. I'm going to go with her in this fight.
And I'm going to differ with you on this one. I'm going to take Mackenzie Dern. The other thing you'll see about this line, too, if you're with me and you like Mackenzie Dern, give it a little while, because the numbers have been the money is clearly going down on Nina Ansaroff. You know, I checked this line earlier in the week as I was getting ready to put together the various other podcasts I do, and the numbers were even money. It was -110 to -110. Dern, I've seen, depending on what sportsbook you're looking at, is as high as +120 on some of them. I think she's an interesting pick here because if you look at Ansaroff's background, she has been taken down before. And not just by in her last loss by Tatiana Suarez, but if you go back, she's been taken down by, you know, Randa Marcos has taken her down. You know, even Justine Kish got her down a bunch of times. Like, Nina Ansaroff does not have flawless grappling defense. And against somebody like Mackenzie Dern, I really only think you have to be on the ground once. And I don't want to write her off for going on maternity leave as she essentially did. But, like, you know, that time off has an effect on her, right? Like, she is not going to be the same fighter. We actually saw the same exact thing with Mackenzie Dern, right? Mackenzie Dern's only loss in the UFC came after her long layoff when she had her kid, right? She fought Amanda Cooper, looked amazing, rear naked choke victory. She came back and they gave her Amanda Ribas off of, you know, over a year-long layoff. And she didn't do well in that, and since then she's looked like a murderer again, including beating Virna Jandiroba with her hands for the most part. So, you know, I'm a little bit worried about what that layoff means for Ansaroff, because it's not just a layoff where she didn't compete. It's a layoff where she, you know, probably had to train less, especially in full contact. So I think between the layoff and the fact that I think Dern has a massive advantage if it ever hits the mat, I'm going to go with the underdog here.
Yeah, no, I had a hard time picking this fight, but yeah, that's all very solid points. And if Dern wins this fight, she's, you know, getting skyrocketed up to the top of the class, you'd think. Probably
for sure.
Big
and, especially because she's like, she's a picture of what the UFC wants to market to, right? She's like all over Instagram all the time, posting pictures all the time. She is half Brazilian, half American, and she's got the Brazilian accent, and is a great gateway into being marketable in both of those countries. So, like, yeah, I have to imagine if she wins this fight, she's on a very short list of people to fight whoever is the champion after the upcoming title fight.
Yep, there you go. All right, moving on to middleweight. Smiling Sam Alvey is dropping down to middleweight for the first time since 2017, which is interesting since he's one of our questionable hashtag chunky guys. I think we're going to settle on he's a dad bod, I think. Right?
Yeah, he's got a hashtag dad bod.
Okay. not chunky, but yeah, this is going to be interesting, him dropping down to light heavyweight. He'll be fighting Julian Marquez, who does not have a dad bod. That's for sure. And he's not a chunky guy. So Alvey, 33-14-1. That's with one no contest. That is a lot of fights. This is his 50th fight, I guess, as a pro. Wow. Amazing. 19 knockouts and 3 submissions. He's 10-9-1 in the UFC. He hasn't been around that long. He just fights nonstop. He was also in the Ultimate Fighter House. He was 1-1 in there. He also was 1-1 in Bellator. Listen to this record over his last 5 fights. 0-4-1. So we thought the remedy to that would be to drop down to middleweight. So we'll see how that goes. Usually changing weight classes does not fix people's problems. Aging fighters, that is. He's got 3-inch reach on Marquez. He's got grappling stats in his favor. Also, he's at plus 155. The Cuban Missile Crisis, Marquez, 10-2 with 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's taking this on short notice, so that is something of note. He's 2-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight back in February, so it's a quick turnaround also for him. He was on the Contender Series. He's 1-0 on the Contender Series. He also was in Bellator, where he lost his only fight. He's 4 years younger. He's at minus 195, and he is my pick in this one, for sure.
And we're going to differ again.
Oh, you're taking Smiling Sam.
Smiling Sam Alvey coming off of 5 straight winless fights. That's right. I'm going to take him that way. And listen, this is why I'm going to take him. If you look at their last fights, Alvey has a draw against Dong Jung, which, you know, obviously doesn't look great. Marquez has a win over Maki Pitolo. And yeah, it looks better in Marquez's favor if you talk about that fact versus, you know, the fact that Alvey's on a large streak, we'll call it a winless streak because the last one wasn't a loss. But also, Alvey looked good in that fight with Dong Jung. He put a 10-8 third round on a light heavyweight guy who's undefeated, and we talked about earlier today, he's tough. And so, like, that fight wasn't bad for Alvey, and I also think Alvey coming back down where the guys he's trying to knock out are a little bit smaller, I actually think that bodes well for his power because he's a counter-striker. He wants to just land the big shot, and when you're doing that with other big boys who have heavy fists, that's maybe not so easy to do. So I like him for that reason, and also I will say I was not impressed with Julian Marquez's last performance. The dude got beat up by Maki Pitolo for 2 rounds. Right, Maki Pitolo took it to Julian Marquez before he kind of gassed out and got choked out, right? And is this a fight where he is going to try to outlast Sam Alvey? That's not a good game plan. Is this a game where you're going to try to submit Sam Alvey? Like, the Sam Alvey's not like a submission risk here. So, like, he's going to stand and trade with Sam Alvey and try to avoid the counter, but I kind of like that kind of fight for Sam Alvey, especially now that he's back at middleweight, which Let's be honest. I think is where he belonged all the time. I know that that's not a great way to save your career, but, like, he's belonged at middleweight forever. He's not a big enough guy to be at light heavyweight. So I really like this fight for Sam Alvian, especially when you see the odds coming in where they're at, you know, the plus 160 to 170 range.
Well, he's Dan's come out and surprised me in the main card. He's swinging for the fences, taking a bunch of dogs here. This is interesting. It's going to be a fun Saturday afternoon. Let's go with co-main event. This is a heck of a matchup and a hard one to pick for me. Featherweights, Arnold Allen, Sadiq Youssef. Allen, 16-1 with 5 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's never been finished in his fights. He's got 1 decision loss, and that was not in the UFC because he's 7-0 in the UFC, and he's won 9 straight fights. He's been out of action since January of 2020, though, so we're talking a year and a bit. He is a year younger than Youssef, so not much difference there. Grappling stats in his favor, he's at plus 112, so it's plus 112. Youssef, 11-1 as a pro with 6 knockouts, 6 straight wins, all in the UFC. He's 6-0 in the UFC. He's been, also been out since January 2020, so that's a wash there. Inch taller and inch of reach, so that's a wash pretty much, too. Twice more active of a striker than Allen. He's at minus 140. Like I said, it's a tough one to pick, but I'm going with Youssef. We'll see if Dan's going for another dog here.
I'm going for another dog here. I'm going to take Arnold Allen. Yeah, and you know what? I really do like Sadiq Youssef. I think he's a phenomenal prospect. There's like 4 or 5 guys right on the edge of the top 15 and top 10 in the featherweight division that are all undefeated in the UFC. It's these two, Movsar Evloev, Bryce Mitchell, Ryan Hall. Like, all of those guys are killers. And if you matched any two of them up, it would give you a match like this one that's really exciting to watch. The difference for me here is that you're right. Sadiq Youssef is more active, but he also gets hit more often. And that's my real worry here is that he is not as technically defensively sound as Arnold Allen is. And I think Arnold Allen keeps himself safer that way. You know, you can see in the Sadiq Youssef fight on the Contender Series, he got his leg jacked up pretty bad in that fight, right? Like, he could barely stand after the fight was over. And granted, it was against Mike Davis, who's now in the UFC and is doing quite well for himself. But, you know, Mike Davis is not Arnold Allen. And I think Arnold Allen just has that ability to punish him and make him pay for not being as defensively careful as he ought to be. He could live behind that jab. Like you said, he's less active, but he uses some of the fundamentals of the striking a little bit better. He hangs out behind that jab. And I think if he does that and just sort of forces Sadiq Youssef to make enough mistakes and tags him on those, I think this is kind of Arnold Allen's fight to have. I will also say if he does decide to make this into something that involves grappling, actually, like Arnold Allen in that department, too. I don't think it will go that way, but I also think that that's just, like, another bullet he has in the holster.
Yeah, no, Allen's definitely the superior grappler of the two. As for, yeah, strikes absorbed, like Dan said, Youssef gets hit twice as often, actually, as Allen. He may dish more out, but he gets hit just as basically, their strike differential is exactly the same. Because he lands twice as often, but he also gets hit twice as often. So we are differing again, which is good. Like I said, it's going to make some nice, fun day on Twitter on Saturday. So, all right, let's go to the makeshift main event. Middleweights, Marvin Vettori versus Darren Till until Till broke his collarbone. Vettori thinks that's questionable for some reason. He thinks he's dodging him, apparently, but okay. He will be fighting Kevin Holland, of course, because if there is a hole in the fight card, Kevin Holland will fill it. Holland, 21-6 as a pro, 12 knockouts, 5 submissions. He does have 2 submission losses, which is something of note. Once I break down Vettori's stuff, you'll know why. He's 8-3 in the UFC, 1-0 in the Contender Series, 1-0 at Bellator. He lost his last fight, which was famously last month, to Derek Brunson, where he got destroyed. So he's taking this on very short notice. He is 5-1 over his last 6 fights. He's 3 inches taller, 7 inches of reach, plus 240. Coming to this one, Vettori, 18-4-1 with 2 knockouts and 9 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's 6-2-1 in the UFC. He's won 4 straight fights. He's a year younger. He's slightly more active of a striker, but it's pretty much a wash there. He is a superior grappler, no doubt there. Grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 325. He's my pick. I don't like minus 325 in the lines, but he's my pick to win the fight.
I don't even hate the 325 line, to be completely honest with you. Like, look, I like Kevin Holland. I'm glad he stepped up. Like we talked about before, the UFC should exhaust all their options in trying to find somebody that isn't Kevin Holland. But ultimately, there weren't any. But, like, Kevin Holland is coming off of a fight with a guy who, if he's got better wrestling than Marvin Vettori, it's not much better, right? Like, Derek Brunson is a good, very good wrestler, and Marvin Vettori is a quite good wrestler, right? Like, they're both pretty good on the offensive sense, but they also have, like, very similar styles once they get down. They're very hard guys to get out from underneath. They've got good positional awareness. They do hit you a fair amount. Like, this is just a terrible fucking matchup for Kevin Holland to step back in. And I get why he's doing it, right? Like, it's his chance to make himself relevant again after a very ugly loss that clearly pissed his boss off. But ultimately, he's just stepping into that same exact fight. I think it's going to look the same. But I also think Marvin Vettori is probably going to go out there and finish him. Because remember, Vettori thinks he deserves the next title shot. If he had beaten Darren Till, he might have gotten it. Now suddenly he's got to fight a guy way down on the rungs of the ladder that just got manhandled by Derek Brunson. He's going to go out there looking to do worse than Derek Brunson did, to make it look even worse for Kevin Holland. And I think if he does that, he's probably still not going to hit the title shot, but I think he's going to try to do that.
But Kevin Holland's not going to talk as much, he says.
I don't care if he's talking. The thing is about Kevin Holland is that, like, people liked to play off the fact that he was talking as part of the issue. And I get that that's, like, a fun narrative and stuff like that. But, like, literally, you guys were like, it's great when he was talking and winning. But when he's losing, he's also talking. In other words, what you're telling me is it's got nothing to do with how he's performing. He's just talking, and he's always going to do that, and it doesn't matter if he's winning or losing. It just looks bad when he's losing, right? And it's not the first time he's done it either. He did it to Thiago Santos way back when, before he had this long win streak, and nobody really saw it as all that much of a problem back then. And to be honest with you, I don't even think it's a problem. Like, it's how he keeps himself loose or whatever. His problem was he never tried to stand back up after getting taken down. Like, that's a problem you have to fix. And whether he's talking or not, I don't think he gets back up.
Exactly. Yeah, the talking is not the issue here. It just is so striking because you don't see that in the cage.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, especially when you're getting your butt handed to you like he was. So, all right, so we're going to agree on that. But we got a lot of different a lot of different choices, especially in the main card. So make sure you're following Jeff Fox Writer and Gumby Vreeland on Twitter, because I'm sure there'll be some back and forth, especially if I'm getting the upper hand here. If I'm not getting the upper hand, then I'm going to be quiet. So I think we already gave you lots of props as we were going through that. Is there any other props we didn't hit on, you think, that should be highlighted?
So I do really like Marvin Vettori by finish, if you want to try to find that prop out there. I think that's one that seems almost like a can't miss to me. Not that it's a can't miss, because this could go the distance. But Marvin Vettori by knockout is +500. For me, that's pretty nice. So I like that. We mentioned earlier on that we liked Platnikov versus Kasangane to go the distance. Neither of them particularly great finishers. I think that one sticks out too. And I also like somebody like I take Matruz Gamrot for a decision as well. You know, not that like people love making props that are all decisions, but like it's probably going to decision there because Holtzman is a tough guy. He's tough to get out of there, and Gamrot winning by decision is probably going to give you plus money, despite the fact he's like a negative 210, 220 favorite. So, maybe if you want to make that a little bit sweeter, that's the right way to do it.
All right, there you go. We always want to make it the bet sweeter. All right, now let's go with our locks. I am, to remind everyone, I'm undefeated on locks. And Dan is not undefeated in locks. I'm 4-0 and Dan's 1-3. I think you've got first pick this week, though, Dan, so let's make it count.
Let's see. What do I want to go with? my pick here.
You gotta put more thought in this if you're just doing it on a whim. Come on.
I thought you had first pick for some reason.
No, whatever.
I guess I'm going to take Luis Saldana. I think Luis Saldana is probably going to piece up Jordan Griffin. And as I said earlier in the show, the price is right on that one.
Yep, I was going to take that. I should have given myself first pick, but nonetheless. I'll take Jack Shore. He's at minus 150 also. That's a good enough line for me for my locks. So locks are Jack Shore over Hunter Azur and Luis Saldana over Jordan Griffin. I think we both agree on those two as locks, right?
Yeah, and that's if you were going to pick first and take Saldana, I'll be honest, I was going to, you know, Jack Shore was also my pick.
Boom, there you go. All right, that'll do it. You people have had enough. You've had enough of us in your dirty ear holes, as I like to say. So, as I said earlier, make sure you follow us on Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer, Gumby Vreeland. You can join in on the trash talking Saturday afternoon when this event takes place. Make sure you listen to Dan's other podcast, Top Turtle MMA. Who's on it this week, Mr. Vreeland?
On it this week, and somewhat sadly, because while we were taping, the fight got canceled. It just posted earlier today that with interviews with both Chase Sherman and Parker Porter, who were scheduled to fight next weekend against one another, and that fight has since been canceled. Parker Porter no longer fighting. So when you talked before about being on my show being a jinx.
There you go.
Apparently it is. There goes Parker Porter. But I will tell you the good news is, and you'll enjoy my breakdown next week, Mr. Jeff Fox, because now Chase Sherman is fighting who's my favorite heavyweight in the whole wide world.
let me think. I'm still thinking of Porter and Sherman because that was going to be like a good chunky guy fight. Let me think. Another heavyweight who's a chunky guy.
He's not a chunky guy, but he is my favorite heavyweight. You know this.
Andre Arlovsky is your favorite heavyweight.
Andre Arlovsky is now Chase Sherman.
Oh, he's taking a short notice fight. Wow, imagine that.
Yeah. Huh. So, unfortunately, my interview with Parker Porter, maybe not the most relevant thing anymore. The one with Chase Sherman is still a pretty good listen, so I'd make sure to check that out.
All right, awesome. So make sure you check out that. Check out the prelim picker, too. See if Dan has all the same picks as he does in our podcast.
I didn't waffle once this week.
All right, awesome. And then obviously check out our fight week stuff over at MMA-manifesto.com. I just posted a breakdown of Luis Saldana that Dan wrote, so make sure you check that out for all you Luis Saldana marks out there. And obviously check out sportsgamblingpodcast.com, which is our mothership. Having, like I said, minimal pre-production, so I didn't come up with a sign-off to the podcast. I was stealing Sean Green's saying let it ride and stuff, and I was doing Motorhead. So I don't have anything planned for this week, so I think I'm just going to end it like this.